I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about 5 years into the Act 10 era, the after effects of Wisconsin's battle over union power altering public education in the state. This is the subject of a major report by Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Dave Umhafer, who studied the five-year impact of Act 10 during a nine-month fellowship in public service journalism through the Department of Communication at Marquette University. He examined, you may have seen the long piece, and I'm sure there will be many other stories as a result of this examination. He examined financial reports and teacher data on the state's 424 districts, comparing old collective bargaining agreements and 2015-16 employee handbooks from randomly selected school districts. He found that once anchored in communities, teachers are now moving from district to district, creating, he writes, a year-round cycle of vacancies and turnover as fewer people enter the profession. Newly empowered administrators are rooting out more underachievers, slowly but steadily linking pay to performance. Unions, of course, have lost strength and have lost membership. And there are many other findings in this very exhaustive report. So we thought it would be interesting to talk to a couple of the state superintendents to find out what's happening in their area. And we know there are a lot of, if some of you have a break in your school day, which I know is really long, you may want to be able to, well, you are able to call us if you can, or those of you who are concerned about education in the state, and that is many of you, our phone number, as we speak with the superintendent of the River Valley School District in Spring Green and the superintendent of the Kettle Moraine School District this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter, @KDunnShow. And of course, many of you are parents or grandparents of children in schools throughout the state of Wisconsin. You work in the administration and you've been affected by Act 10 in some way or another. We have two guests with us. Thomas Wormuth is the superintendent of the River Valley School District in Spring Green. He was named the Wisconsin Rural Superintendent of the Year by the Rural Schools Alliance. He was previously principal at Plain Elementary School and has spent more than 10 years working and teaching in the River Valley District. Thomas Wormuth, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
this afternoon.
Our pleasure. Also joining us is Pat DeClotz. She is superintendent of the Kettle Moraine School District. She's been there for more than 10 years. She left college just two quarters shy of her teaching degree in order to provide for her family, worked 20 years in financial software, and then went back to school and became a teacher in 1996 and then a principal. Superintendent, rather, and has served on many state school committees. Pat, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Good afternoon, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to have time with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, and I'm so glad we're talking about this issue. So it's been 5 years now. Let's start with you, Thomas. What do you see have been the major consequences in your school of Act 10?
Well, it's interesting. For our school district, first of all, to describe it just briefly, we're a very geographically large low population, dispersed population school district. So we're about 300 square miles.
Ooh, that's big.
In total, and we serve about 1,300 students, a little bit less than that. So we serve about 4.5 students per square mile. Almost 90% of our student population is eligible for busing. We maintain four relatively small elementary schools in our district, a middle school and a high school. And from our perspective, where we're really seeing a difference after Act 10 is the number of teachers that are applying for positions with us. We've felt a decline of we're really receiving about 10% of the applications that we were, the applicants that we were prior to Act 10.
Only 10%?
10%.
Oh,
correct.
My gosh.
So when we used to post for an elementary school position, for example, we've had up to 120 applicants. When we post now, and just within the last 5 years, when we're posting now, we're receiving 10 to 15 applications, 8 to 15 really, which is just very, very different for us. And we had positions, two positions this summer that we posted for multiple times and had zero applicants.
Goodness.
Now, I don't know if that's directly connected to Act 10, but it certainly seems to be a pattern in rural areas over the last 5 years.
So what do you do about that?
What do we do about that? Well, this is it's an unfortunate occurrence that's happening in our school district. We have teachers that leave our school district. We're about 35 miles west of Madison, and we have to compete with some of our neighbors to the east that are in a different financial situation than mm-hmm. we are. So we have teachers that leave our school district to go to the communities that collar the west side of Madison. And what happens if we can't replace those teachers through postings is we use the Family Friend Network and unfortunately end up recruiting teachers from our neighbors.
Hmm.
Generally, our neighbors that are a little bit smaller than us and don't have the resources that we have. So it's turned into this domino effect, at least in the west southwestern part of the state of Wisconsin, mm. where as teachers move towards the Madison area for a variety of reasons, the smaller districts get lose their teachers to the larger districts.
Ooh, that's quite significant. Patricia, what have you noticed has been the biggest consequence of Act 10 in the Kettle Moraine?
Well, I would say there are both positive and negative consequences that we realized immediately and that we see over time. So going back 5 years, there was very definitely a negative impact on the morale mm-hmm. of educators and people working in the education business. It was very hard to see, and it was very difficult for my teachers, my educators to go through. It was a change that many in non-represented groups had already experienced, and so there was an understanding that there needed to be a realignment of the system. And in many ways, Act 10 served to make Kettle Moraine a viable school district. We were in a situation where our collective bargaining agreement actually named the insurance provider, and we could not go out for competitive bid on insurances or create benefits that were more in line with that our community residents were experiencing in their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
That division of having that, quotes, Cadillac benefit, that I'm sure you've heard that term.
Sure.
That division was something that was seeing its way into support for public schools from our community, and it was really important as we were needing to go to referendum that we could demonstrate to our community that we had looked at the flexibility that Act 10 provided, and we had utilized that flexibility to put our house more in order from a financial perspective. The benefit that I would say is that we have been able to go out and bid our insurance. We have eliminated our district post-employment benefit. So we took a $31.6 million liability, and it's now basically eliminated. The remaining liability has funds allocated in our reserve to pay that off. What that means to the common person listening is that we are no longer having to worry about reducing how we support students and the children we're serving in order to provide for a benefit to those people that are no longer employed in the district.
Mm-hmm. And that post-employment benefit, was that significant, Patricia? What was that exactly?
It was significant, and I'm not sure if I'm going to get it all exact, but it had been negotiated before I stepped into my role, and it provided for not only a stipend of a teacher's annual salary paid out over 5 years, but also 5 years of medical insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that medical insurance was a very premium or Cadillac plan where employees were only paying 2% of the premium and a very, very low couple $100 deductible per year for a family.
Mm-hmm. Thomas, did you have the same situation prior to Act 10?
Not really. We've always had very positive relationships with our union through the negotiation process. And our union had really made a lot of concessions over time in order to keep our district viable just to begin with. So we haven't had any kind of post-retirement benefit for a number of years. Our pay raises for our teachers were frozen, and our insurance was changing on a really we generally entered into 2-year contracts with providers, and we bounced around to providers where we could find the cheapest rate, and also increase the deductible and copay situation for our employees over time. So for our purposes, Act 10 didn't necessarily provide changes in that regard.
Are you, Patricia, as Thomas was talking about, are you losing teachers to other districts that can pay higher salaries?
Well, I think that is a concern for districts across our state, and it is very definitely a free market agency now. And we did have some turnover right after Act 10. I would say we have some every year. We monitor this pretty closely, and over the past 5 years, it's been somewhere between a low of about 3% to a high of about 13%. And so we're within the tolerances of other industry averages. And I would also tell you that some of the movement has been very beneficial. So I believe very firmly that when you can align your life and your work responsibilities, it makes for more effective employees. So some of the educators that left our district went to neighboring districts so that they could be teaching in the district their children attended. Mm-hmm. They were moving to the district of their residence. Having similar calendars, all of that can make life a lot more balanced when you are a parent, having less miles to drive to get to your job or to be able to be close to your children if they have a performance that you want to attend or
right.
All of that work. You know, that just becomes a convenience that makes for happier families.
Mm-hmm. And yet one of the thrusts of the article, and this figure is pretty astounding, 75% of districts in the state are losing their teachers more often after Act 10 because a competitor offered a better salary or a better benefit. Doesn't that indicate, I want to hear from both of you on this, that there are some districts that have a whole lot more money, people are wealthier, and the property taxes they pay are higher, so you're going to get all the best teachers who want more money in certain districts at the expense of others. Thomas?
And that's not necessarily germane to Act 10. The funding formula that's been in existence in the state of Wisconsin since the 92-93 school year, I believe personally needs to change. And so there are districts with more resources than others. Districts like ours in rural areas that are in declining enrollment situations, most of the revenue is based on enrollment, the number of students that you're serving. So if you're in a declining enrollment situation, you just don't necessarily have the resources. And we have to compete with the districts that are on the west side of Madison that are growing rapidly, and they have a different resource base than we do. Now, it's a limited resource base, but currently they can attract teachers just with pay. So teachers can still live in our area and enjoy the benefits that our district has to offer geographically, recreationally, but receive more pay in other areas. And mm-hmm. what we're seeing out in southwestern Wisconsin is just a huge turnover in teachers. One of my neighboring districts that's about our size, we have 114 teachers in our district, lost 28 teachers over the summer. So you're talking about approximately 20 to 25% of their teaching staff, and that's just not good for children and communities.
No. Are we seeing, one of the interesting parts of the article, Patricia, was that we're seeing, as a result of Act 10, the early signs, the author said, of performance-based pay. Do you feel like you have more ability to pay teachers who are better, higher rates than others? Is that a good thing?
I have, from the beginning, said that I would not want to see a performance-based system in my district. I think performance pay works really well when you're in a sales position, when you're competing against your colleagues. The last thing I want to do is to create an environment where my educators are competing against each other. I want them to collaborate with each other, and that's been the work that I've been trying to put in place for the last 11 years. So we were very transparent with our teachers when this legislation came into effect, and we held listening sessions to understand what's important about compensation and how we could model a compensation structure that would, in fact, help to reward that kind of collaboration and problem solving. I would say one of the benefits that we've seen through Act 10 is we've been able to distribute leadership far more effectively and to develop some career pathways for educators. We now have a compensation system that recognizes initial educators and guarantees them advances that they don't have to worry about over the first 4 years of their career until they're solidly in place. And we also have roles such as a lead educator. After a professional educator, you can become a lead educator, which pays you more because you are doing more outside of the regular work calendar, whether that's evenings, weekends, or during the summer. Lead educators help to develop the professional development of their colleagues and serve as mentors, coaches, advisors. A director of learning role is another step that brings additional responsibilities and compensation, and in those people in those roles actually serve as both administrator and teacher. Part of their day is working with students. Part of their day is working with colleagues, developing a team to meet the needs of their students, and they actually do the supervision and evaluation of that team, very much like you see in a private sector industry. And then, of course, we have various administrative roles. But being able to develop that career pathway has been beneficial in many regards, in that the teacher, the director of learning, has immediate credibility because they are teaching in that content area and experiencing the challenges that the people they supervise see on a regular basis. It also gives people that opportunity to evaluate whether they want to step out of the classroom or whether they like that everyday experience with students. Creates a nice pipeline for succession. But I want to get back to the issue of being able to recruit teachers away because there's more resources.
Right.
I believe really strongly that while Act 10 has given me some flexibility, it's only a partial solution. And I agree really strongly that the revenue limit, which was intended to be just a short-term fix, is now, you know, been in place over 20 years. And even in Waukesha County, which is a pretty geographically tight area, there's differences per student of over $1,700. If you take that difference times we have 4,200 students, that amount is over $6 million.
Substantial.
Take $6 million over 25 years and tell me if another district has ability to do things we can't.
Yeah, exactly.
And as one of my board members mentioned to legislators that we were speaking with, explain to me why my student is worth less than a student that's being educated 15 miles away.
Let's go back to the subject of morale before we invite our audience in. Let me give you the phone number because we'll be with you in just a moment, 800-486-8655. This series, the investigation, indicated that a lot of teachers retired because they were worried about losing some of their benefits, and they were worried about not as much take-home pay, not as much say in the classroom, the morale. And I've heard from a lot of teachers over the years since Act 10, it would seem as though the morale of teachers, the attractiveness of teaching as a profession, has diminished since Act 10. Is that overstating the case? What have you found in your school district, Thomas, and what do you do about morale? Because it's an important job and you want people to be feeling really good about what they're doing.
That's really the key for districts like ours to maintain an experienced teaching voice and to be attractive to young teachers coming into the profession. I believe, obviously, while Act 10 was taking place, teachers were somewhat vilified, and I think that's impacting the number of people that are electing to enter the profession at the post-secondary level. And I believe morale took a really big hit shortly after Act 10 was legislated. What we've done as a school district is really try to provide positive experiences for our teachers and show them through a variety of ways that they're really valued. And that's the real tool that we have available to maintain a qualified teaching staff is to just be a very family-friendly, very hard-working, diligent, with our eye on the ball school district, but also have some fun with it as well.
We'll go to phone calls. We'll ask Patricia about that. I give her the same question in a moment. But I don't want to exclude you from this conversation any longer, so let me invite you. What's happened to schools, school districts, as a result of Act 10 in the 5 years since it's been enacted? What are you seeing? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. We'd like to read your messages on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and if you like us when you're there, you'll get announcements about upcoming shows, which is a good thing to get, don't you think? And we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. To you momentarily, our guests this hour are Patricia DeKlotz, who is superintendent of the Kettle Moraine School District, and Thomas Wormuth, who is the superintendent of the River Valley School District in Spring Green. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, to phone calls. Eugene and Viola, our first caller. Hi, Eugene.
Well, good afternoon, Kathleen.
Hi.
It's been about 16 years since I've been in the classroom. But now, the way I read Act 10 and what I have heard, that they do not have to give you justification for letting you go. So let's say a young teacher out of college gets into a district and stays about 10 years and builds a good program. By that time, he or she has got their master's degree, and the administration figures out they're making too much money. They're too high on the salary scale, and they let them go, and they don't have to give them justification for doing it. And I'll take my answer off here.
Thanks, Eugene. Patricia, let's give that to you first.
I'm not sure if I could understand why someone would do that. To me, an educator is the resource that we need to accomplish the work we've been given, which is educating those children. And having highly qualified educators is most important. Even though there's no longer a federal definition of what that means, we know that it is the teacher that is the absolute backbone to accomplishing the responsibilities that we've been given. And we strongly encourage master's degrees amongst all our educators. Could that happen? I would see only if you're very short-sighted. And I would definitely encourage others to get into education for a very worthwhile and rewarding career. One of the things that Tom mentioned with regard to the shortage of teachers, Act 10, I believe, has contributed to that shortage, but there are other things that came into play to make it a perfect storm. There was a much heightened requirement for people in pre-education, pre-service programs to become teachers, including videotaping and a lot of intense scrutiny of how you become an educator. Then there was the addition of the educator effectiveness on a statewide level that added a complexity to what an evaluation might look like. And then the third or fourth part would be restrictive licensing. So I served this past year on a state superintendent's working group on school staffing issues. And one of the recommendations that we made to address some of this short-term crisis in some of our more rural areas is to make it more possible for retirement-eligible educators to stay in the classroom by letting them renew their license without having to get the additional certifications that have been typically expected, either credits or a professional development plan to look at how we can give those people who are like, well, I need to renew my license, I don't want to go through it, so I'm just going to retire, to be able to extend that license to make them available to be in the workforce. Some of them are 57, 58 years old and may still have a lot of satisfaction by serving in a classroom, but they don't want to jump through the hoops of relicensing. We also look to try to get extended flexibility for the types of subjects that can be taught with a license or to add credentials to that license. So I think that from a state perspective, the Department of Public Education realizes, or public instruction realizes, that they can play a role in helping to address some of these shortage areas.
Mm-hmm. Thomas, back to the area, do you think that you, and I know it would be hard for you to say that you do this, but you must know a lot of superintendents all over the state, that there are, and I've heard this too, that people are let go because they may be at the top of the salary and school districts are facing financial crunches, so they have to let some people go because they have more power now to do so as a result of Act 10 and bring in teachers who are younger and are at the bottom of the pay scale.
School district that's done that, to be honest with you. I would imagine there were other reasons if a person were to be let go. I can speak about the River Valley School District, and we've never even considered that. Our job as administrators is to put the best teachers we can in the classroom and do everything we can to facilitate their professional development. We're not in a position or in practice of trying to age people out after they've potentially made a little bit more on our professional development scale.
Mm-hmm. Let's go. Thanks, Eugene, for the call. Randy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Well, good afternoon. This doesn't pertain to the school system, but I'm a retired water wastewater operator, and Act 10 has dramatically affected my industry. The majority of the older operators left after Act 10. We lost our union contracts and our benefits packages and whatnot and left. I'm one of those. The people that came in to replace us, we grabbed anybody we could from smaller communities. I work for a larger city. Well, that's winding down because there are no qualified water wastewater operators here in the state. The people that we do train, they get 1 or 2 years' experience or licenses, and then they go to a different state that has better benefit packages or more salary. So it's quite honestly, Kathy, it's crazy out there in the water wastewater industry. The city that I formerly worked for is looking for an operator right now for the wastewater plant, and they can't find anybody that's qualified. Not only has Act 10 affected the school systems, it's affected every portion of municipal government.
Mm. Thank you, Randy, for your comments on this. Thank you. Let's go back to health insurance for just one moment, because Act 10 was to have resulted in a lowering, school districts not having to pay as much for health care because of the insurance company in some districts that teachers had collectively bargained for that were really good. Have you been able to lower health insurance costs for teachers in your district, both of you? Thomas, you want to start?
Lower the cost that
lower the cost of health care for your employees.
No, we haven't been able to lower the cost of health insurance. Our deductible has continued to increase pretty much on a semi-annual basis, and the amount of money that each employee contributes to our health insurance has increased over the last 5 years as well. I don't know if that's necessarily related to Act 10 as much as it is related to health insurance costs. I mentioned this earlier, our union and administration for many years has worked together to try to find viable health insurance at the lowest possible cost. But no, our health insurance continues to increase. Act 10 hasn't necessarily impacted that as much in our district. It sounds like, as Pat was talking earlier, it sounds like in her district that was almost a non-negotiated item, but in ours it was.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this issue, and maybe it's different because there are a lot of different school districts all over the state of Wisconsin. The article also looked at laying off of teachers in some districts, and they cited Eau Claire, some districts are laying off teachers and requiring those who remain to teach an extra 85 minutes each day. A lot of teachers worried about too heavy a work schedule. It's been too much for some, and those who were near retirement decided to leave the profession because of that. Have both of you, because of cost constraints, had to deal with that, asking teachers to do more? Patricia?
I would say that the role of education continues to evolve. So we've asked teachers to do things differently. Sometimes that feels like it's more. I don't know that we're asking them to do more. But the role of an educator is very hard work. And anyone that thinks it's an easy job doesn't understand the complexity of children mm-hmm. or the responsibility of helping to bring them along that pathway. So I would say the workload of an educator is a heavy workload. It's a heavy responsibility. And when we have not changed our expectations as far as asking teachers to teach more minutes without compensation, we actually have gone to a block schedule at the high school that's created some better efficiencies for the teacher that I think is well received by people there. And we are continually working to see how we can redefine that learning environment so that teachers have the opportunity to collaborate within the workday among their colleagues and to recognize how that role is changing. It's difficult work.
Yes, I agree with you on that. Thomas, what about your district?
We haven't changed the expectations of the day as far as the structure of our day. What we have done, and I'll just use our middle school as an example. Our middle school, we serve 6th through 8th grade, and we serve about 300 students a year, about 100 per class. And traditionally in our middle school, we had a 6th grade teacher, a 7th grade teacher, and an 8th grade teacher in every core content area. Over the last few years, in an effort to be a little bit more efficient and be a little bit more cost savings, we basically eliminated an English language arts position, a science position, and a social studies position. We maintained three individual grade level teachers in the area of mathematics, but for the other three core content areas, we have teachers that will be teaching part of the day in 7th grade and part of the day in 6th grade. And then the same thing if you're social studies, and the other corresponding social studies teacher will be spend part of the day in 7th grade and part of the day in 8th grade. So we've increased class sizes a little bit, and we've, although the day hasn't changed, the structure within the day has changed a little bit for mm-hmm. some of our teachers.
I see. Let's go to Randy in Sauk County. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, hi. You know, I think you're fighting an uphill battle. First of all, I want to comment. I'm retired now, but I had taught 6 years right out of college and loved it. Made the mistake. It was a great teacher, and so the suggestion was made, and I'm sure this mistake you had seen happen, mistake was made, oh, let's make an administrator out of him, and realize a year or two in, I want to go back into the classroom. I love teaching. And my superintendent at the time was not like these two people. This, by the way, this lady, I don't know the man, you seem like you are fabulous. And so, anyway, I just love good schools. I've always supported our schools. But my superintendent then said, nope, you've got too much education. I got to pay you too much. You made the decision. You're out. And so, you know, basically, I don't know. I always loved farming. And so my degree was in kind of a tech thing. And pretty soon they're crying for tech ed teachers and blah, 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 and ag and all that. And you know, I thought to myself, I'd check into trying to get certified, and it'd be 5 years worth of extra stuff, and I had a PhD by that time. Mm-hmm. I think this, people don't trust, as much as you want to do this reform, like this superintendent said she's trying to do, bless her heart, the public doesn't trust this system anymore. It just puts up, it's trying to protect people it shouldn't protect, good people of goodwill. It doesn't even ask their opinion. And I don't know, I think there needs to be some more reform. There's a few of us out here on your side. And boy, I tell you what, if you're a good teacher, you got my heart and vote. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Randy. Patricia, he loves you. Let's go to you first. I think he likes Thomas, too. But go
sure
ahead.
And Tom does a great job. I'll just tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I think you both do.
Work. I do believe that education needs a lot of reform because society is changing. So I do believe that the way we accomplish that is by empowering our educators to help redesign how we provide and meet the needs of those students. It used to be that educators were kind of the deliverer of content knowledge between the textbooks and the educators. They were kind of the source of knowledge, that sage on the stage. Society has changed. This has nothing to do with Act 10. It has everything to do with the influx of technology into every aspect of everyone's lives. And now knowledge is ubiquitous, and we as educators have to play and do play a very critical role of coach and mentor, helping students to discern what's real information and how they can understand that difference. There's good and bad with technology, and the educator plays a big role in helping students to develop their understanding of digital responsibility and in curating the knowledge that they access. So in my mind, an educator's role has never been more important, even though information is more ubiquitous. It's a very complicated, sophisticated society that we live in, and we need to ground our children in who they are and understanding what role they play in moving society forward.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Itty with this email. Thomas, we'll give this to you first. I'm a college administrator, formerly with the UW colleges. After Act 10 and the poisonous atmosphere and the way teachers and educators were vilified, I tried to hang on. But after 5 years following successive budget cuts, I finally had enough and jumped ship. Is this a common refrain that you hear, Thomas, or do you hear it less and less?
I hear it less and less, to be honest with you. I think right after Act 10, we lost a number of teachers that were eligible to retire and just elected to do so at that time. But I think over time, our teaching staff that has remained has gotten used to life after Act 10. And again, we try to provide an atmosphere where professional development is key, where our teachers are valued. And I think most school districts try to do this as well. And try to keep people that are in the profession very, very happy.
Mm-hmm. And what about recruiting? I'm wondering if both of you, Thomas, answer this for me. We hear that the number of people going into the profession is down, and it's not just due to Act 10. It's due to a lot of states in the Midwestern area and perhaps beyond. What can you do as a school district to attract people to enter this honorable profession? Do you see that as part of your job, or who should be doing that?
Well, it's multifaceted. One of the things that our school district's doing is we're really trying to, at the high school level and middle school level in particular, foster the career aspirations of students that want to go into education. So we're constantly on the lookout for some of our own students in a grow-your-own kind of model to mm-hmm. try to encourage to go into the profession. And I think that's going to be critical for us over time as well. And then just from a global perspective, we're in a pretty unique position because, you know, not only is our school district is based in Spring Green, but we also have buildings in the villages of Plain, Arena, and Lone Rock, and we run along the lower Wisconsin Riverway. So geographically, we're in a beautiful location
in
the
state
of Wisconsin, and we have a lot to offer. Our art fair is phenomenal. American Players Theater is in our area. Taliesin is here. We claim the house on the rock. It says so on the road signs, but they're actually in the Dodgeville School District. So there's a lot to offer in our area, and I think we tend to play on those things that might be attractive to teachers that we're in the recruiting process with.
Mm-hmm. Patricia, how about you?
Sure, and I think that there's just a tremendous amount of value in the role or the career of being in education. So it is a highly desirable profession for those that have that affinity. But there are specifics that can be done, and I think that our Department of Public Instruction plays a role in that. There are many times that people mid-career want to make a shift, and we can ease that process for them. Some changes have been made in licensing to help to facilitate that in some of the shortage areas, especially current technical education. But there are areas that we have chronic staffing shortages. Working hand-in-hand with our colleges of higher ed, universities that offer those teaching credentials, to help guide people into those roles and to eliminate some of the barriers that inhibit people pursuing those careers would be very much appreciated. We're working to make those changes. We're also working to make the relicensing an easier process, yet still with rigor and understanding of that continuous improvement model. We look at, are there ways that we can encourage young students to go into education? And there's a lot that we can do to try to help people see through some of the noise and realize the advantages that, this career has.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking to two superintendents in different parts of Wisconsin. The aftermath of Act 10, our piece, stimulated by David Umhafer's work, very extensive series, actually, on the five-year impact of Act 10. He did a nine-month fellowship in the Department of Communication at Marquette and looked extensively at 424 districts all over the state. There are two more pieces in this series, and those will happen before the end of the year. One will be focusing on unions, and then the other on teachers. So that's coming up. We have more to look forward to. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is @KDunnShow. Two guests with us, Patricia DeKlotz is superintendent of the Kettle Moraine School District. Thomas Wormuth is superintendent of the River Valley School District in Spring Green, Wisconsin. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Two more phone calls. Mary in Wauwatosa. Hi.
Hi. Since Act 10, I see a big increase in parent advocacy for public education throughout the state. So I'm wondering what's their view on the growing number of parents and community members that are standing up for public schools, and do they think it will have an impact on the upcoming budget by increasing funding or even possibly raising the revenue cap?
Thomas.
Yes, we have a lot of advocacy for education in our area. We're actually going to referendum next week. So parents have played a critical role in that process in our district, and usually when we get together, the conversations revolve around trying to make some changes to the funding formula in Madison. Do I think that'll happen? I don't know if that'll happen in the near future, but certainly parents have played a big role in advocating for referenda that have occurred at really unprecedented rates across the state of Wisconsin.
Patricia?
Sure, and Mary, I appreciate the role that parents in Wauwatosa have stepped up and taken on, and you do see this increasing across our state. I think it's a fabulous demonstration of the involvement parents need to have, not only in education, but in policy that's being enacted at a statewide level. So making your voice heard is a part of the democratic process, and I commend all parents that take a stand and make their voice heard.
Thanks so much, Mary, for your call. Sue in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, this is Sue. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a retired teacher of, I taught 33 years. And I think the focus on teachers in terms of making sure that they're doing the excellent job that they should be doing is very important. But I think to some degree that focus has been misplaced. I think it needs to be placed on the administrator. If you have a poor teacher, it's serious and affects a classroom. But if you have a poor administrator, it affects the entire school.
So how do you make sure we get good administrators? What's your advice, Sue?
Just like we get good teachers. You go into school, you ask the kids, who's a great teacher? And they all know. You ask a staff, who's the best administrator you've had? They all know.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to respond to that a little bit, if I may.
Of course.
Sure, and I agree with you. And I think part of how you know that is by asking. And since Act 10, we have implemented regular surveys, do focus groups as well, but regular surveys twice a year of our staff and annually of our students and of our parents to get feedback and to look at it not just once, but over time. So I couldn't agree more that we need effective people in every aspect of education. Doesn't stop with a teacher for sure, and the support that administrators play in the lives of teachers can make or break their effectiveness.
Thomas.
I agree. I mean, we try to encourage our teaching staff, particularly the teachers that are standout. We have a very similar process or are working on a very similar process that Pat described earlier about moving towards a professional educator designation within our district. And administrators need to be held to at least the standards that teachers are in order for school districts to be effective.
Thank you so much for your call. And let's go to Michelle in Mineral Point. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I'm actually just coming back from college right now from UW-Platteville.
Oh.
I'm going home to Mineral Point.
Okay.
I've been in the workforce about 20 years. I have a degree in business from Platteville, but I'm going back for teaching.
Oh.
So I'm a non-traditional student going back, making a life change, going back into teaching. And my concern is about the future. Obviously, nobody can predict it, and I know we kind of talked about what options and opportunities are out there for the future, but how is that going to affect, like, getting a job, especially Southwest Wisconsin area, of being an older person that, you know, in their middle age with the health care costs and all of that with, you know, like I said, I'm starting over, so.
I think you might be in demand.
High demand.
What do you think?
I think she'll be in very high demand. What we found, and this isn't taking anything away from our teachers that enter the profession at age 22, but what we found anecdotally in our district is that mid-career people that come into teaching maybe have children that are school-aged and some real-world experience, have a perspective that really adds value to teaching staff in the profession.
Mm-hmm. Patricia.
I couldn't agree more. I love my second career educators. They just bring a wealth of knowledge and understanding that's unique to that perspective. I also love my educators that have gone from high school to college to education. And, you know, I think having diverse viewpoints of experience helps to contribute to that collective problem solving and collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Thank you. I guess my biggest concern is I'm going for a second bachelor's, so this won't be a master's degree for me. However, I know there's a lot of great teachers out there that are minds that have their master's degree. And so for me, it's coming back in as a bachelor's in teaching. So hopefully, cross my fingers, in a few years, the demand will still be there.
I think it will be, and I've served on literally hundreds of hiring committees over the last 30-plus years, and not once have we said, oh, does this person have a master's degree or this person have a bachelor's degree? Across the districts that I've worked in, including the River Valley District, we're always looking for the best candidate who will be the best fit in our district.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks very much for your call. I hesitate to say, I'll do it, but it has to be short. David in Hartford, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I resigned from teaching 3 years ago, and now operate my own property maintenance service, and found I could work probably less hard, making quite a bit of money, doing just as well. My wife still teaches, We both are passionate about education. We have children in school districts. My concern is with the voucher programs, how it's kind of privatizing education, also funding that.
Okay, and I need to stop you there. I'm sorry it's late. Can somebody give a 15-second response to that, if you're concerned?
That's a different topic, but we have a hard time funding one educational system in the state of Wisconsin. I think when we create a dual system, we're going to be in serious trouble.
All right.
And maybe, Kathleen, a topic for another time.
Absolutely. There are always topics in this area. Thank you both so much. You're great.
Welcome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Patricia DeClotz. She is superintendent of the Kettle Moraine School District. And we thank Thomas Vermouth, who is the superintendent of the River Valley School District in Spring Green, Wisconsin. That was interesting, wasn't it? And please, our show today prompted by the lengthy piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that Dave Umpafer has been working on, and there are more to come before the end of the year, one on unions and another on teachers. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the hour, and thanks to Zeb Gozman for on-air work here in Milwaukee, and thanks for listening, and thanks for your calls, and until mañana.